You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
Well, welcome to this week's edition of the Princeton Lacks Cast. Jerry Price here with head coach Matt Matalon, back after a week off. As last week we had Bryce Chase on, and judging by the feedback I got from so many people, I think it was a real sign of what people think of Bryce within the Princeton lacrosse program. Yeah, not just the fact that Bryce is a funny guy, but I think that people, they love that aspect of his personality, but I think they know that, like, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I need somebody here, I can call Bryce and he'd show up in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we're blessed to have him. I mean, we're fortunate, and you hit it on the head. I mean, it was great to listen to him. You know, we were hoping he was going to go off the cuff a little bit.
I think he was a little more guarded, but he, you know, yeah, more than I thought he would be. But I think, yeah, you know, I think what comes through for him, and I think what came through really in the feedback I got was, you know, just the sense that people, you know, the stability that he's brought to the program and to so many of the guys who've played here and coached here.
Yeah, I mean, his love for our guys, the fact that he's coached fathers and sons, his perspective, his approach to it, how tied in, and his support from Phyllis. I know personally. He's a great friend, but he's a great resource for our program. So I was happy that the Tiger faithful got to hear from him.
Yeah, one thing that I meant to mention to him, I asked him about his relationship with you and Coach Tierney, and the one guy I forgot to mention was David Metzbauer, who was Bill's assistant here for more than 20 years, and he and Bryce were very close. And I apologize to Metzi if he listened, that you know, I meant to bring him up to Bryce as well. And I think that, I don't know how well you know Metz. You know Metz at all? Or
I do.
I mean, he has the same kind of place for a lot of these guys that Bryce does. And, you know, when you think of Bryce, you think of all the cursing and you think of how funny he is. But that's your first thought. And then your second thought is, you know, who he is and, like, you know, how reliable he is and how strong his personality is. And then you think of Metzbauer and you think of, you know, the lacrosse piece and that. But then when you take another step back and you think about him, you think about, like, what a great guy he is and how loyal he is to so many of the people who've, you know, played here and coached here, and what Princeton lacrosse will always mean to him. And I think that, you know, when you have somebody like who's so unique like he is in terms of his personality and in terms of his place in the history of the sport. I mean, he, you know, you want to say Bill Tierney is the greatest head coach of all time. You make the case that David Metzbauer is the greatest assistant coach of all time. And
I think it's a justifiable case. I mean, he's done outstanding wherever he's been. And he was a mainstay here in a time where the second assistant spot, you know, Coach Tierney made reference to it at one point, where it would turn over every single year. So to have continuity within the players and the programs, there's a huge importance on that.
Yeah, and I think when I think back to all the time with Coach Tierney and Coach Metzbauer, I think that they were really, you know, they were really good for each other. And the thing about Metz is that you know, a lot of people say, like, I don't want to be the head coach. I don't want to have to sit here and do the lax cast every week, or I don't want to be where, you know, you were earlier this week when you were at the PVC luncheon talking about the team. And, you know, being the head coach, there's a lot of, you know, you're the front man, you know, you're the lead singer, and a lot of people don't want to be the lead singer. But I think, you know, in his case, I think he loves the lacrosse coaching piece. And one thing I always think back to is when Coach Tierney brought him to the postgame press conference after the 1998 NCAA championship game at Maryland, and we had won. And, you know, Metzi was just, he, you know, Bill wanted him to share in the moment. He wanted people to know what Metzi brought to the table. And, you know, you could see that it wasn't Metzi's thing, that, you know, he just, you know, I want to coach a lacrosse team and I want to win championships and I want to work with the guys more than I want to be the lead singer. And, you know, I think he's been kind of faithful to that for his whole career. And, you know, you can't help but have a lot of respect for that. And with Coach Schillinglaw retiring at Delaware, which is where Metzi graduated, you know, maybe he does want to be a head coach at some point. Maybe he is somebody they would consider. I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it or anything like that. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see how he would do if he did actually become a head coach.
I mean, I'm sure he'd be outstanding. He's a guy that, you know, going through the ranks as a young assistant, he was someone you always looked up to and I always envied, you know, and always a guy that I'd sit there and be like, man, I'd love to work for that guy. You know, he's got a great approach to the game. He's a humble individual, but, you know, really when it comes down to it, you know, he is exactly how you explained him. I don't want to speak for him, but he doesn't have the ego that he needs to be a head coach. He just wants to impact players and impact programs, and he's done that everywhere he's gone.
What do you think of all those challenges of, you know, being the head coach? I mean, people think of being the head coach as, okay, I'm the ultimate decider if we pull the goalie or if we're going to start him on attack, or, you know, this adjustment during the game. But it's also so much more to it than that. Even doing this, and you know, or even just speaking to an alumni group or something like that, I think that, you know, that could be daunting for a young head coach. What's your take been on that?
I mean, you know, I think you hit it on the head. I think that, you know, pulling the goalie or making an in-game adjustment, that's the small stuff. But I think the biggest shift for me is I'd been a coordinator, you know, my entire career, and I loved immediately impacting one side of the field and building relationships, whether it's a defensive unit or an offensive unit. And now as head coach, you don't have those immediate relationships. You have kind of the overarching relationships with the team and the program. And I love being able to send the message, but it's always with the blessing of your staff. And I think that, you know, I've kind of, in my career, I've kind of watched and been around very successful and great head coaches, you know, specifically Gene Peluso at Stevens. And he did such a great job of utilizing his assistants and letting them grow within their systems and not kind of micromanaging. I think the biggest change for me is just being able to kind of step back and take more of a GM role and help facilitate the growth of Coach Bernhardt on the defensive end and have him learn the ins and outs of Princeton and help Coach March, you know. And I didn't hire Coach March as the offensive coordinator. I hired him with the mindset of he will take over the offense as soon as we get on the same page. And that happened more quickly than I would have ever imagined. And he's off and running. Our offense statistically is killing it and couldn't be happier. His approach, his offensive brain, it's unbelievable. And then just managing, you know, I think that's where it came into. I felt that in my first year, I think in order to have our program be the most successful, it would be in the managerial position in terms of managing three new assistants and getting them acclimated to the Princeton experience, to the Princeton student, to the Princeton atmosphere, and, you know, get us off and running quickly. So I think it may shift every year. It may not. But right now it's working. And, you know, to your point about, you know, the luncheons and the speeches and this or that, I think it's just an opportunity to brag about our guys. So I'll take every opportunity I get to do that.
Well, let's brag about one guy that you mentioned a minute ago, is Jesse Bernhardt, who after the game the other day left and then drove to Annapolis to play for the Bayhawks in Major League Lacrosse, which I think there's something pretty cool about that. Is that something you ever did?
Oh, it's awesome. I used to do it when I was coaching at Stevens Tech. And I was playing for the Lizards. I would shoot out after games, you know, bust my hump, quickly get there to a hotel late, or shoot right over to the game. And again, I was a backup goalie for 6 years in the league, so I wasn't walking in. I mean, Coach Bernhardt, you know,
he was the defensive player of the game.
He's an all-star. Yeah, I mean I knew that, and it doesn't surprise me. He's the smartest player on the field. You know, he'll be anchoring defenses in the MLL for years to come, and hopefully our world team as well. But no, it's awesome. I think, you know, it's funny because he was actually playing in practice a handful of times, you know, throughout the week, just getting in a couple drills, showing our guys maybe how to play the top of this zone, or, you know, just getting a little sweat. He even ran a conditioner with our guys. I think he caught a couple guys off guard when he finished first.
He'd have a chance to get some playing time if he was here.
Yeah, I think so.
So let's go back to Saturday. It was a 12-9 win over Harvard. And we'll look ahead to the future in a few minutes, but let's just go back to that game for a few things. One is Gavin McBride. You know, when I was talking to Jesse the other day, he said, I knew he had a good game, and then you look and see he had 7 goals, and maybe you weren't thinking he had 7. And 7 is a lot of goals. And he has, you know, I mean, we've had great goal scorers here before. We haven't had guys who put up 5-5-5-5-7 like Gavin McBride has.
No, 7's a lot of goals. I mean, I think we were, you know, and I think if you asked Gavin, if he was sitting right here right now, he'd say he probably should have had 10 or 11. But no, it was a special performance. He did a great job. Harvard had a really nice game plan against us. They came out, they zoned us, they rode us. They did a nice job at the faceoff X. So it put a lot of pressure on guys early to make plays. When teams zone you, you know, if you kind of sputter off the start, you know, and they hit a couple on the other end, then they kind of find their groove, and, you know, it makes you question yourself a little bit. And we put a lot of pressure on Gavin early to, you know, to hope that that wouldn't happen to us. And he did a nice job stepping up for us.
I mean, 2 in the first half, 5 in the second half, you know, 7 of the team's 12 goals. I mean, that's a big time performance. And you turn around, and for every great player in Division I lacrosse, and, you know, if you stopped 100 really knowledgeable college lacrosse fans and ask them who's leading the country in goals scored, you know, you'd get Connor Fields or Dylan Malloy or Ben Reeves or, you know, any number of guys from the ACC. And the answer is Gavin McBride. He has 46 goals. No player in Division I has more goals than he does. I mean, that's, you know, that's very impressive to me.
It is. It's, you know, and you're right. I mean, he's, you know, he may not be a household name, but if we can handle our business, you know, it's our job, you know, as a staff and a program to get guys that recognition by playing deep into May. So that's our goal.
And then the other guy obviously is Michael Sowers, who broke Rob Pinnell's record for points in a season by an Ivy League freshman. He now has 70 for the year. Pinnell's record was 67. Pinnell has the Ivy League record, which I think is 352. You know, do the math on Sowers. I mean, he's going to stay healthy, hopefully. Let's, you know, we'll all knock on wood here, but stays healthy to make a serious run at that. Yeah, but to get to 70 points as a freshman, only three other players in the history of the program have done that. Mike McDonald did it, John Hess did it, and Jesse Hubbard did it. Now Michael Sowers, and he has at least two more games to play. He can get 8 more points. He will tie McDonald's single season record, and he's doing all this as a freshman. I mean, I know you've said many, many things before, but like the one thing I would say is that the McBride Sowers dynamic is a pretty impressive one.
It is. Michael's done an incredible job. It's, you know, I think it's just his poise and preparation are what help him take advantage of his opportunities in these games. He's a really, really special player, but you know, what folks don't get to see is kind of what Jerry mentioned and, you know, that duo of McBride and Sowers. And they've got an incredible bond. You know, I wish we could open up our locker room to more people and, you know, our practice to more people. But to see how these two prepare, they're in the office on a weekly basis with Coach March sitting there just trying to figure out, you know, how to dissect the defense or how to take advantage of our offense in certain opportunities. And then they're kind of the voices as we get out into the 6-on-6 sets. And it's their preparation, and it's their preparation together. It's really incredible. I don't want to say it's brotherly. I don't know how to explain it, but how these two look out for one another.
They look
laugh,
like brothers.
Compete. Yeah, they do a little bit. Laugh, compete. It's just, it's really special. And it's a testament to Gavin as a senior and an upperclassman of bringing a young guy along quickly in the fold and then also making sure he's in the right spots to be successful.
Then one other player from Saturday is Tyler Blaisdell. You know, you want your goalie to do almost exactly what he did the other day, which is make all the saves you should make and take a few away from them. And in a 3-goal game, you know, as great as Gavin was, as great as everybody else was, the difference in the game was the saves Tyler made that maybe he shouldn't have made and turned the game around a little bit and, you know, kept some off the board. And, you know, you don't want to say anybody ever does exactly what you hope, but I mean, that's pretty close to exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah, we've been really happy with Tyler thus far. He's gotten better every week. And to put up an 18-save performance against a very good Harvard team and a good Harvard game plan, it was important for us. It was important for our team. It was important for Tyler. Still a couple knucklehead plays, but in terms of 18 saves is 18 saves. That's an incredible stat line. And you said it, he made some big ones down the stretch. And, you know, we made a couple mistakes on the offensive end, and he was able to kind of stack stops for us. And, you know, we're really happy. We can hope that he can keep driving forward and keep getting better as we make a run at this.
Two off his career high, which was 20 in the loss to Johns Hopkins a year ago. It's the only time Princeton goalie since Alex Hewitt did it in 06 that a Princeton goalie's had 20 saves in a game. So, I mean, Tyler has certainly had some big moments. It was the last game at Sherrod Field for the 11 seniors. Just, you know, you don't have to mention them all by name, but just talk a little bit about the senior class, which got here when you got here and is the first senior class during your first full year as head coach. So I think it's probably a special group to you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they came in, we kind of came in as freshmen together. You know, I spent 3 years as an assistant before becoming the head coach here and watched these guys come in as kind of squirrely little freshmen and not really sure where they're going to go academically, where they're going to go, you know, find their groove socially, find their groove, you know, physically in terms of the weight room and our locker room. So it's a special group. It's a group that's been through a lot, been through about 10 assistant coaches, 2 head coaches. So to endure that and have the maturity to keep chugging forward and adapt to continued policies, procedures, culture shifts, I think it's a testament to their leadership and how they've done for our program. And, you know, Bear Goldstein and Gavin McBride are 2 captains, and Bear is actually a 2-year captain. So that continuity and leadership is important. But I think what's most impressive about the senior class is they're an extremely relatable group. At times, you know, you come in and you're freshmen, and then you have your seniors, and maybe they don't really connect because they're in two very different parts of their lives. These freshmen are coming in, you know, just worried about, you know, how to survive, find the cafeteria, you know, figure out their class schedule. And these seniors are, you know, at the same time, they're coming into their senior year trying to decide, you know, what job opportunity they're going to take, where they're going to end up living, where they're going to, you know, and how everything's going to shake out. So it is very two different experiences. What's most impressive about our seniors, you know, it doesn't get spoken a lot about, is just how well, you know, they've kind of meshed our entire team and how truly relatable they are. I think it's the best way to explain it. So I'm happy. Again, we're cherishing the time, cherishing every practice, every day we get with these guys. So we wanna play as late as we can and as deep as we can for that group.
I always say that the most profound thing my father ever said to me was in the day I went to college and he's getting ready to leave and he said, "Do you know where the dining hall is?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, you get hungry enough, you'll figure it out." It was genius in that somewhere.
Great advice.
So you mentioned playing as far as you can. You're guaranteed of playing beyond the end of the regular season, which is Saturday, a 3:00 face-off in Ithaca against Cornell. And it's a very strange last weekend in Ivy League lacrosse because the Ivy League tournament field is set. So no matter what happens this weekend, it'll be Princeton-Brown at 3:30 a week from Friday and Penn-Yale at 6 a week from Friday at Yale in the Ivy League tournament. So the challenges are to not look past the game against Cornell, which can't impact the standings in any way, and then not to look ahead to Brown too early, but understanding that that's out there 6 days after you play at Cornell. So, you know, got to be pretty happy that you're in the Ivy League tournament. Also, the one piece of drama left is if Yale loses to Harvard and Princeton beats Cornell, then the teams will share the Ivy League championship, even though Yale would be the host team and the number one seed. So there's still some significance to the game, depending on what happens in the Harvard-Yale game. But, you know, talk a little bit about going into the Cornell game. I think it's fairly safe to say that Cornell is a team that has struggled but has gotten better. Certainly has some talented players. Their goalie has played well. They have the two freshmen who can score, Jeff Teat and Connor Fletcher. You know, they have some familiar names. Really missed the faceoff guy from last year. But in general, you know, it's Cornell, and going up to Cornell is never going to be easy.
No, this is look, it's our next game, so it's always the most important. It's an in-conference battle, and it's a game between Cornell and Princeton, which is always going to be upbeat. And the way we're looking at it is we take every game very seriously for the sheer fact that as a college lacrosse player, as a Division I college lacrosse player, you're only guaranteed a certain amount of games. So you're not going to waste an opportunity by looking ahead, or, you know, we're not going to waste an opportunity for our guys to say, "Hey, we're going to use this game to prepare for Brown." Sure, there's a long-term approach to this, but we're going to go into this game. We're going to continue to get better this week. We've still got to work on coming out of the gates a little faster. So we've got another week to practice and make sure, you know, we start our first quarters, we come out with our first 6 to 8 minutes and really win those opportunities. Again, you know, it's as much as it doesn't have any implications for Ivy tournament play, it'll be a great stepping stone in terms of how we carry ourselves into a playoff week.
But at the same time, do you start preparing for the Ivy tournament? Do you start, obviously you just played Brown a few weeks ago and there's not a lot of secrets there, but, you know, at what point does the focus, not for players, but for coaches, you start to think, all right, well, what are we going to do when we play Brown a second time? Or you just do this week like normal and then look ahead after that?
No, naturally, we've already started thinking about that. You know, shelter our guys from that a little bit. You know, and it won't affect our game plan for this week, but it's always in the back of our heads. We're starting to work on it.
So one thing before we go here at the end of this week's edition of the LaxCast is I wanted to mention that one of the unique things about Princeton is I think that there's three people that have been in their roles for such a long time that I think of any team in Division I, if you take these three roles, probably Princeton has the longest continuous service, and that's me, who's been doing this for nearly 30 years, George O'Neill, the athletic trainer, and Gary Mosley, the equipment manager. And Gary's been here long before George and I were here. So forget me, because, you know, I wanted to talk about George and Gary, but talk a little bit about those two guys. I mean, you have guys, and, you know, throwing me into the mix, who have a lot of institutional memory, a lot of program memory, a lot of loyalty to the program, and a lot of knowledge of how things have been done over here for a few decades. But just talk a little bit about Gary and George and what they bring to the program, and you know, what they mean to Princeton lacrosse.
It's funny. I actually just mentioned this in our senior day celebration, and then I alluded to it in the PVC luncheon as well. But, yeah, it's incredible to be able to come in and have these resources, you know, including yourself on and around our team. It helps shed perspective, but it's always funny. It's, you know, you look at you know, Jerry, George, and Gary, and they're guys that have seen it. They've seen it when it looks right. They know what it looks like. They know what it feels like when it looks right. So, you know, it's always funny. I may nudge a guy or two and be like, hey, how does it look? How are we feeling here? And, you know, there are times when G will say, hey, this resembles this team, or you guys are taking shape to this team, or remember this game. You know, George has such a vast memory of injuries and players and this and that and his relationships. I think it just really helps kind of put in perspective. I mean, there's such an emphasis on the history of this program. And, you know, I'd said it when I'd first taken over that we will do everything to honor and respect the men that have come before us and the coaches that have come before us and built the Cathedral of Lacrosse here as we continue to push forward into excellence.
And I think one thing about George and about Gary is that, you know, in different ways, they're total non-BS guys. And, you know, I think George, in his role, you know, he sees through things and he sees the truth about people and he gets to know the guys on a different level than most people. And I think he, you know, I think they respect what he does and how he pushes them. And then Gary, you know, he's one of these guys that, like, you know, he's going to get right in your face and tell you when you're, you know.
Yeah, it's true. They're awesome guys. I mean, again, George in the training room, it's a tough job. You know, we're pushing them to mend these bodies and get these guys back on the field. And he's a no-nonsense guy with more fire and more passion and energy for this game. And
it's a tough sport to be the athletic trainer because, I mean, it is a physical sport. There's the physical pounding of the sport, but there's also the wear and tear over the course of a season. And, you know, I think George I think he may know the guys better than anybody else, like who they are, how they are, what makes them tick. I think when you get to know them in the way that he gets to know them. And then the thing about that I think about Gary is, you know, that I think that he, you know, like me and like George and like Bryce and guys have been around, I think he values Princeton lacrosse over any one person or any one thing. And I don't think he wants anybody who's going to paint Princeton lacrosse in a negative way. And if I think people start to go down that road, he lets them know that they're going down that road. And I think that, you know, I think his loyalty to the program above all else, I think is really impressive.
That's the best way to put it. I mean, it is a true from the bottom of the heart loyalty. And you hit it on the head with George in terms of George gets these guys in vulnerable moments, you know, when they're hurt, when they're on the ropes. So he does know them in a different light. And, you know, we have weekly meetings with our strength conditioning staff and our training staff, and, you know, we push these guys to take care of these guys' bodies above and beyond. You know, so we're forever grateful for those guys. And then you hit it with G, you know, in terms of Gary Mosley, you know, he won't let a guy approach this the wrong way. There's too much care and there's too much loyalty. So you're spot on.
And then lastly for today, just the halftime event from the game against Harvard where they had the 67 team, the 92 team, and the 97 team. I know you didn't see any of it, but, I mean, you knew it was going on. You know, again, it speaks to the loyalty of the program and how, you know, the experience that people have had here. And, you know, I thought it was a really great thing to see the three groups all mixed together, not separated. This is our team, that's your team, this is their team. You know, I thought just it was just a great Princeton lacrosse moment.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Ed Calkins, the head of our friends group, he's done a huge amount of work to kind of ensure that that's how our program runs. And it's great. I mean, the 67 guys were out at practice the Friday night, you know, in preparation, throwing around with some wooden sticks. We even had a guy in cage for a quick moment. Scary, but funny. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I mean, it truly is an incredible family. And to get 28 guys on the 1967 team to return 50 years afterwards, it speaks, it's so impressive that these guys can get back and they care that much about their teammates and the program that it's incredible perspective to shed on our guys. So we're thrilled.
Coach Madelon, thanks for being with us here this week on the Princeton LaxCast.
Thank you.
It'll be Princeton at Cornell. That's a 3:00 faceoff on Saturday. If you're rooting for something, root for Cornell's women to lose and root for, no, excuse me. root for Cornell's women to win and Penn's women to lose, and then Princeton women can host the Ivy League tournament. But Princeton, with a women's win over Columbia on Saturday, would get a at least a share of the Ivy League championship. For Princeton to get a share of the Ivy title, they'll need a win over Cornell and a Yale loss to Harvard. And again, it's Princeton-Brown in the Ivy League tournament semifinal. That game comes up a week from Friday. But first, it's Princeton-Cornell. It's been the best rivalry in Ivy League lacrosse since day one. Two teams that have won the most championships by far, and it's always a great game. Princeton-Cornell really looking forward to going up there and seeing their freshmen play and letting them see Sowers play and the rest of Princeton. And we'll talk about that game and obviously look ahead to the Ivy League tournament when we reconvene next week. In the meantime, for Coach Maddox, it's Jerry Price thanking you for being here, and thank you again for all of your support for Princeton lacrosse.